wonder when it first happened to you. I think it was in my primary three classroom in White House Primary School in County Antrim. It had always been a place of safety for me. It was a pleasant classroom with big kid desks. And I was always at home in my third row seat until that day when I went to take my place, flopped down as usual, only to find that someone behind at the very last moment had kicked out my chair. I'll never forget the cascading surprise, fear, pain, embarrassment of that moment. And to this very day, there is a tiny residue of nervousness at sitting down on a chair. I wonder if anything like that has ever happened to you. All of us have our memories of sliding chairs, I suppose. We can think of times when we told someone a secret, only to have it blabbed to someone else. We can recall the people to whom we gave our hearts, only to have them dropped. We can remember promises made to us and broken, best laid plans that went to waste because someone else didn't hold up their end of the bargain. We can recall people in whom we believed, only to have them turn out to be something other than they seemed. And if we find it hard to trust individuals, then it is becoming no easier to trust in the institutions upon which we formerly felt we could depend. It's not hard in our imaginations to think that trusting is becoming harder and harder to do. Confucius told one of his disciples that three things are needed for government: weapons, food, and trust. And if a ruler can't hold on to all three, he should give up the weapons first and the food next, and trust should be guarded to the end. Without trust, we cannot stand. And Confucius' thought still convinces. Weapons did not help the Taliban when their foot soldiers lost trust and started to desert. Food shortages need not topple governments when they and their rationing systems are trusted, as we know from the Second World War. But it isn't only rulers and governments who prize and need trust. Each of us, and every profession and every institution, needs trust. We need it because we have to be able to rely on others acting as they say they will, and because we need others to accept that we will act as we say we will. One sociologist was right when he said, a complete absence of trust would prevent one from even getting up in the morning. We may need trust, but trusting often seems hard and risky. Every day we read of untrustworthy actions by politicians and officials, by hospitals and exam boards, by companies and schools. We supposedly face a deepening crisis of trust. Every day we also read of aspirations and attempts to make businesses and professionals, public servants and politicians more accountable in more ways to more stakeholders. But can a revolution in accountability remedy our crises of trust? Some feel that sin has so irreparably stained and damaged the stability of our world that there's nothing left for moral people to do anymore but duck and take cover. Others speak as if most people in authority are in reality liars and cheats, and that we might as well take up the same methodology ourselves, if that's what it takes to fight fire with fire to get by. Others have lost the capacity almost altogether to believe in the essential trustworthiness of those in authority. For in a world of 24-hour news cycles and so many scandals, genuine scandals, now it seems the fastest rumor wins whether it is true or not. Retreat, rumor, cynicism are mounting in a world of sliding chairs. When we meet King David in Psalm 22, it is at a moment when the chair seems to have been kicked out from beneath him as well. We don't know if it was his own failings or those of others or a combination of both that has landed him on the ground. What is clear is that he now looks around in humiliation at the faces of people, all of whom seem suspect. He says, I am a worm and not a man. I am scorned by men and despised by people. All who see me mock me. They hurl insults, shaking their heads. He likens his adversaries to bulls and to lions and to dogs bent on destroying him. But in the midst of David's passion, at the very moment when he is feeling least secure, it's interesting to note that it is an image of God and motherhood that comes to mind. He says, yet you brought me out of the womb. You made me trust you even at my mother's breast. From birth, I was cast upon you. From my mother's womb, you have been my God. It is a confession both of the faithfulness of a mother to instruct her child in the ways of God, to model the ways of God, and also an image of the faithfulness of God. A God who reaches down to take hold of our lives and to knit us together, to show us his trustworthiness from the very beginning of our lives. And I submit to you this morning that what is needed amidst the trust trials of our generation are three simple commitments that this text from Psalm 22 makes plain. The first is this: we must recover as individuals and as a society a picture of what trustworthiness really looks like. And the chair of trustworthiness has four legs. They are character, compassion, competence, and consistency. And God in this psalm models all four of these legs of this chair of trustworthiness to us. Listen to what David says about God. You are enthroned as the Holy One. You are the praise of Israel. You who fear the Lord, praise him. All you descendants of Jacob, honor him. Holiness is simply purity of character. It is the capacity to remain true to one's highest purposes and priorities, no matter what the external pressures are. No matter what others are, how others are behaving, no matter what the fashions or the laws of expedience may dictate. And God's character expresses itself supremely in compassion. David observes, the Lord has not despised or disdained the suffering of the afflicted one. He has not hidden his face from him, but has listened to his cry for help. The psalmist says elsewhere that compassion is unfailing love. It's a deep concern for all the people under one's care. The compassion of God is shown in the way he listens to the cries of his people and resonates with their afflictions. It's seen in the way that God is willing to sacrifice his comfort and the trappings of his office to serve the beloved, even to the point of dying on the cross. And alongside holy character and compassion stands God's competence. David can pray in the first verse of this psalm, do not be far from me, for trouble is near and there is no one to help. Because God actually has the competence to be able to help where others cannot. He has the wisdom and the resources to work out his compassionate purposes even when the challenges are tough. And this God does with consistency. In your fathers put their trust, says David. They trusted you and you delivered them. They cried to you and were saved. In you they trusted and were not disappointed. Someone has defined consistency as faithfulness stretched out. It's the discipline and the courage to keep showing up on the job day after day, year after year, giving one's best, keeping one's promises, so that in the long haul, those who put their trust in you are not disappointed. God is trustworthy because of his character, his compassion, his competence, and his consistency. Four legs that remain steady and cannot be moved. Some of the best parents, some of the best mentors that I've known have these qualities too. When we have a picture of what trustworthiness really looks like, it helps us make the second commitment needed in our time. Namely, we must humbly seek to be even more trustworthy ourselves. As Paul once remarked, it is required of those who have been given a trust to prove faithful. Do you hear the imperative in these words? I don't know what trust you have been given today. If you're a parent or a grandparent or a teacher or a business or professional person, a politician, a caregiver, a group leader, then this imperative applies to you as it does to me. It is our responsibility to help provide people with the stable chair from which they can work and learn and love and dare to risk their gifts in life. No individual, no institution will ever do this perfectly, of course. And deeply troubled people should be stopped from habitually kicking out other people's chairs. But even the very best of us make mistakes that leave others wobbly. The weight of the job, the finances and family, life can easily shorten one of these four legs of even generally trustworthy people. The complexity of leadership in large organizations can mean that meeting the needs of the many may leave some feeling bitterly disappointed. But we can't take this lightly. Sometimes being trustworthy means acknowledging that we wish we'd proven even more faithful. When I look at my own character and compassion and consistency and competence, I know that I have further growing to do. And I beg others' forgiveness for that, even as I ask God's grace for those who along life's way have somehow failed me. And so to the third part of this sermon. Sometimes, however, it's only when we come face to face with our own limitations or those who have broken our trust that we come to understand this fully. There was a woman who once phoned a church to ask one of the pastors, would he be willing to come and pray with her father, now in the last stage of a terminal illness. The next evening, the pastor went to the house and was ushered into the bedroom. The pastor found the man lying in bed and positioned at an angle next to him an empty chair. I'm glad you were expecting me, the pastor said, nodding at the vacant seat. The man looked confused for a moment and then said, oh, I see what you mean, the chair. Would you mind closing the door, pastor? Puzzled, the minister, the pastor, closed the door. The man said, I've not been the most religious man you've ever met, pastor. I guess I've always felt that I could trust in myself alone. And when I got sick 4 years ago, I started wishing I had something more than myself to turn to. I remember how when I was a child, I'd be sick and afraid in the night and I'd go and put my head in my mum's lap and she'd sing hymns till I fell asleep. She was a person of tremendous faith. And when the doctor told me to get my affairs in order, I was absolutely shattered. All my life, I've never known how to pray. I used to hear people talk about prayer, but frankly, it went right over my head. Then one day, about a year ago, a friend said to me, Joe, prayer is simply a matter of having a conversation with Jesus. Here's what I suggest. Sit down, place an empty chair in front of you, and in faith, see Jesus on the chair. It'll feel a little weird at first, but it's not. Jesus promised, I'll be with you always. then go ahead and speak to him the way you're doing with me right now. So I tried it, said Joe to the pastor. I liked it so much that nowadays I do it for an hour or more at a time. I'm careful, though. If my daughter saw me talking to an empty chair, she'd think I'd completely lost it. You don't think I'm crazy, do you, pastor? The minister laughed and said, no, I don't think you're crazy at all, Joe. And then he prayed with the man and anointed his head with oil and returned to the church. 2 days later, the minister got a call from the man's daughter, reporting that her dad had died that afternoon. How did it happen? The pastor asked. Well, I told him about 2 o'clock that I needed to go to the shops for a little bit, and he called me over to his bedside, told me he loved me, and kissed me on the cheek. When I got back from my errands, an hour later, I found him dead. Sounds like he went peacefully, the pastor said. The voice on the phone hesitated. Yes, she said, but there was something a little bit strange. Apparently, just before he died, Dad did the weirdest thing. He leaned over and rested his head on the chair beside the bed. What do you make of that? And the minister felt tears well up in his eyes. I believe your father just dared to trust the one who holds him now. Let the morning bring me word of your unfailing love, the psalmist once wrote, for I have put my trust in you. Lord, show me the way I should go, for to you I lift up my soul. Amen.
Courage, brother, do not stumble, though thou wilt be black as night. There's a power to guide the humble. Trust in God and do the right. Let glory be rough and dreary, and is bent far out of sight. Moved it bravely, strong or weary, trust in God.